Zechariah 14, beginning with verse 1. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city shall be taken, the houses rifled, and the women ravished. And half the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations as when he fought in the day of battle. And his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west. And there shall be a very great valley, and half of the mountain shall remove toward the north, and half of it toward the south. And you shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azel. Yea, ye shall flee, like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. And the Lord my God shall come, and all the saints with thee. It shall come to pass in that day that the light shall not be clear nor dark, but it shall be one day which shall be known to the Lord, not day nor night, but it shall come to pass that at evening time it shall be light. There shall be in that day that living waters shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them toward the former sea, half of them toward the hinder sea, in summer and winter shall it be. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day there shall be one Lord, and his name one. All the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba to Rimmon, south of Jerusalem. It shall be lifted up and inhabited in her place, from Benjamin's gate unto the place of the first gate, unto the corner gate, and from the tower of Hananeel unto the king's winepress. And men shall dwell in it, and there shall be no more utter destruction, but Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. That's Zechariah 14, 1 through 11. Today we want to continue with the image of Nebuchadnezzar in talking about the feet and toes, talking about the Arab Empire, and some of the things having to do with the last end of that particular fair. One of the things that we noticed, we noticed the Bible history of the people we call the Arabs, and we went also through the period of Muhammad in his part of the history of the Arabs, the fact that they have great territory, great riches, and also now have great power. The thing that we want to talk about today is the controversy that exists between Israel and the Arabs, and how this will work out in the end. We think it's going to be a very great battle, and we believe also that Israel will be the loser. I can remember in, throughout my time in the Church of God Abrahamic Faith that we always thought that the enemies of Israel would come down to take a spoil and pray, and that about all we could think of that Israel had in riches was the phosphates and the Dead Sea. Well, the Dead Sea is shrinking, and people are worried about it, but yes, there's wonderful mineral wealth, but it's not something that's going to cause the nations to come against her, because the enemies with oil and other raw materials have much more than Israel has to offer. It seems from the study of the scriptures that Zion or Jerusalem itself is going to be the root of the controversy and bring the enemies against Israel in the end. As we brought out last week, Muhammad was said to have taken a night journey to Jerusalem and ascended on his favorite steed to the seventh heaven from the Dome of the Rock, where Solomon's temple was, and where the so-called Mosque of Omar is today. And so they have, they're in choosing the towns or cities in which they place great love for, they go Mecca and Medina, Jerusalem. And they do not take into consideration the centuries that Israel possessed Jerusalem, but they just feel that this is an Arab city and they want it. In fact, when back, especially in the days of Arafat and others, whenever they talked about negotiating, it always came down to Jerusalem, that this was the prize in the end, that they were very dissatisfied that they did not have Jerusalem. And so this, all this, in other words, as we get into the scriptures, we see that they seem to point to the fact that Jerusalem is the prize and the root of the controversy. In the 12th chapter of the book of Zechariah, it talks about Jerusalem and Israel as being a burdensome stone. And when you think about this in the history of the city, especially with Israel, it has indeed been a burdensome stone. It's the 12th of Zechariah, the burden of the word of the Lord for Israel, saith the Lord, which stretcheth forth the heavens and layeth the foundation of the earth and formeth the spirit of man within him. Behold, I will make Jerusalem a cup of trembling, and to all the people round about, when they shall be in siege both against Judah and against Jerusalem. That day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. All that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, though all the people of the land be gathered together against it. King James says earth here. Remember that in both Old and New Testaments, the words that are translated earth in many instances are equally able to be translated land. So here she is, a burdensome stone and a cup of trembling. And it seems that, for instance, after World War I, Britain was given the mandate over it, and she was bombed and fought all through those years till they finally gave it up and gave up her protectorate of that. And that's when the nation of Israel was formed, and that's when the war broke out that led to the dividing of the land as it is today. But you notice that it said specifically, Jerusalem. I will make Jerusalem a burdensome stone. That it would be this would be a means or a reason for people to be angry with each other and fighting each other. And so it said, even though all the goy, the people of the land, be gathered against it. The other week, we talked about the 83rd Psalm, and it said, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more heard in the earth. This is one of the things that we all agree that seems to be the only thing that all of the Arab peoples have in common, all the Muslim peoples have in common, is their hatred of Israel and their desire to destroy Israel. And so it goes on and names them. They are confederate. And let us cut them off from being a nation. So they goes on and talks about it. And God, the psalmist was praying that God would make them stubble and would destroy them as even though they had destroyed the earth. And so it names all of them that are listed in it. In fact, there are 10 major ones. But the end, of course, is that men may know that the one whose name alone is Yahweh is the Most High over all the earth. And the thing that I've seen, I don't know how strong the text is. I hope I'm not reading into it anything that's not there. But in the 17th of the book of Revelation, I almost have that left. But anyway, it goes on and talks in the 12th verse, the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These make war with the lamb, and so forth. So I think this is where I personally see this idea that And there may be other texts that are plainer than this, but I don't, can't recall it right now, in which I believe that these 10 toes, 10 kings, whatever their description is at the time, that they give their power to the beast for 1 hour, and they have their power 1 hour with the beast or the last government. And so when I think about modern warfare, I think that's about all it would take to invade and defeat Israel, because with modern armament and all the different things that we have, the armies of the world have at their disposal, it would it could be done in an hour. So they say, "Let us cut them off from being a nation," and they unify, it seems, for about an hour. This is, as I said, I believe all it would take, but it surely would. It mentions all these peoples in the 83rd Psalm. And one that we have used for many years and are all familiar with is the 38th of Ezekiel. And there's a lot in this particular text, but the main thing is talking about bringing the nations against Jerusalem. And God seems to indicate that it's his job. In fact, J.P. Wheaty's book done in the 1870s, his whole message was that he believes that God gave power to the Arabs to punish Israel because of their unbelief and because of their turning away from him. Really, that's when you read the 28th through the 30th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy, it does seem that that is how God did it. He brought people against Israel to punish her and to bring her in line because of her turning away from him. So anyway, here we start out in Ezekiel 38, and it mentions Gog, the land of Magog, chief prince Meshach and Tubal, prophesy against him, say, "Thus saith the Lord God, behold, I am against thee, O Gog, chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. I will turn thee back and put hooks into thy jaws. I'll bring thee forth, and all thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling the sword. Persia, Ethiopia," Persia, of course, is Iran, Ethiopia, Libya, "all of them with shield and helmet, Gomer and all his bands, the house of Togarmah of the north quarters, and his bands, and many people with thee. Be thou prepared and prepare for thyself, thou and all thy company that are assembled unto thee, and be thou a guard unto them. After many days thou shalt be visited. In the latter years thou shalt come into the land that is brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many people against the mountains of Israel," against that have always been waste, but is brought back or from brought forth from the nations, "and they shall dwell safely, all of them. You shall ascend and come like a storm. You shall be like a cloud to cover the land, thou and all thy bands, and many people with thee," and so forth. So this is talking about the invasion of Israel, coming against the mountains of Israel. God, in a sense, punishing Israel for her unbelief. But there are people who read a lot in here. In fact, in all of our Church of God libraries back through the years, we have the Destiny of Russia and so forth, and people are always seeing Russia and Gog and Magog and Meshach and Tubal. Really, I think it's reading something into the scriptures. In fact, Andrea the other week said she'd like to have a map showing where these countries used to be. Well, I have maps. I didn't bring them today, but the Caucasus generally were a barrier to expansion of civilization. In other words, we believe Eden was somewhere, maybe in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. And after the flood, they spread from there, went up the Euphrates. They were on Mount Ararat, came out of Ararat, and came down the Euphrates River and peopled all that. But the Caucasus was mainly a barrier. So when you get looking at the ancient maps, and most of you have them in their Bibles, that as Gog and Magog and Gomer and all these are all south of the Caucasus Mountains. They're not in what is Russia today. Russia is not in the territory covered by the prophecies that we're the dominion. It's just not there. And so as a result, we need to look rather in the areas, like it mentioned here, Persia and Gomer and Togarma of the north quarter. In fact, this has been, I'm talking about modern warfare, but I don't know of any place, country that has more horses than the Arab countries. The horse is still very important in the Arab countries. Yes, they have armaments that all of us have been selling to them, but it talks about horses a lot of times in these scriptures. And I don't know whether there's still going to be horses used. It may be that if they outlaw atomic warfare and other types of armament, that maybe we'll get down to horses and maybe to rocks. Who knows? But anyway, it's a way of looking at it. But anyway, it does talk about the people from the north. And when you look at Israel, who's north? Well, you got Syria, and it's northeast. You have Iraq and Iran, and other people that are definitely in it. But we're going to find out. In fact, from the 83rd Psalm, you find that Edom or Idumea is mentioned a good many times, and they're going to be very important in this whole thing. This chief prince in the 38th of Ezekiel, the Hebrew word there is Rosh, R-O-S-H, and all it means is head. And in fact, the Bereshis is the Jewish name for the book of Genesis, in beginning, or the head of this. In fact, when you look up, take your Young's or Strong's Concordance and look up Rosh, you'll find it's used hundreds of times in the Old Testament. Most often, it has reference to the chiefs of the tribes of Israel. So far from saying Rasha, and people reading into Rosh, Rasha, it's talking about the heads of the nations. And so we believe that these are the countries that are named in the dominion of God, and that all of these countries that are here in this particular chapter are named there. But you see them coming down into the land that has been brought back from the sword, where the people are dwelling safely. In fact, it uses the thought of the unwalled villages, showing peace and security that may be more in effect than fact, because we know that they are very vulnerable. So anyway, as he goes on, we see that the nations of the land, in fact, many times this has been a question to all of us, how will all of the nations be brought against Jerusalem? Well, some of us have said, well, maybe it's through the United Nations that they all come. But when you go back to this idea, it's not all the nations of the earth, but all the nations of the land, especially of the dominion, that you see that it'd be a lot easier and for them to actually come. So the thing that we don't like to hear, and I don't like to hear, because I'm a Zionist and I'm pro-Israel, thing I don't like to hear is that Jerusalem, Israel, will be defeated. And I know that there was a man one time that had Jews in the News, Casimir Lanowick, and he was of the Dawn Bible Students. And his philosophy was that when God set his hand to bring Israel out of the nations, that they never would be defeated. But I think there's too much here to indicate that she will. Even though she's been brought back from the nations, she does not really trust in God. Israel has been restored to the land. The land is being restored unto Israel, but Israel has not yet been restored to God. He goes on and talks in some place in Daniel where they trust in the God of forces. The word, if you look up the word forces there, it's munitions. And that's one thing that Israel has been very advanced in this, but the thing of it is that they're trusting in those arms. And as a result, we know that the armed man will fail. And so it says that the day of the Lord cometh, and the day of the Lord is not Sunday, by the way. This is the day that God is going to pour out his vengeance. But anyway, he gathers all nations against Jerusalem to battle. The city shall be taken, the houses rifled, the women ravished. Half the city shall go forth into captivity, the residue of the people shall not be cut off. It's bad to see this, but we do believe that this is indicating that Israel will be defeated one more time. She has still not learned. She still trusts in herself and has not learned to trust in God. In fact, one of the things that indicates that she will be defeated is the so-called darkening of the sun, moon, and stars. And this may seem far-fetched to people, but the key to sun, moon, and stars is the dream that Joseph had, in which the sun, moon, and stars bowed down to his star. And his brothers understood. He said, well, are you saying that your mother and father and all of us brothers will bow down to you? And, of course, they didn't like to hear that. They were very jealous. That's when they sold him. But that seems to be a key text about sun, moon, and stars, that it is representative of the nation of Israel. And so, therefore, the darkening of the sun, moon, and stars, I don't believe is literal, but I do believe that it is for the defeat of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is compassed with armies. We know that it will be defeated. There's another text here that I was using, and that is the book of Joel, the third chapter, and there are the 9th through the 17th verses. Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles or the nations, prepare war, wake up the mighty men, let all the men of war draw nigh, let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords, your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves, and come, all ye heathen or nations, and gather yourselves together round about. Thither cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. Let the heathen be awakened, and come to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come get you down. The press is full, the fats overflow. Their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withhold their shining. But then the Lord shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem. So forth. So this is the same thing that is preached in Zechariah 14. The city is taken. Houses rife, but then shall the Lord go forth and fight as when he fought in the day of battle. Here he has him in the valley of decision, but then the Lord will roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem. That key text of the whole Bible on Israel prophecy, the Song of Moses in the book of Deuteronomy, you have the nations and the enemies of Israel coming against her and defeating her, and when they defeat her, she looks up. And then God goes and fights for her and saves her. But right now, she's in unbelief. Most of the political parties in Israel are not religious. They go all the way from the extreme right to communists. In fact, a lot of people hold us against Israel, but Israel was really formed not by religious people, but these were German Jews who came there to establish kibbutz, to have things in common, and to do the things their own way. And they were not very religious. But in the 32nd of the book of Deuteronomy, it goes on to say that he would hide his face from them for a little while. And then it goes on down to say, vengeance, to me belongs vengeance and recompense. Their foot shall slide in due time, for their day of calamity is hand, and the things that shall come upon them make haste. The Lord shall judge his people. But in the same verse, 36, he will repent himself for his servants when he sees that their power is gone, there's none shut up or left. And he shall say, where are their gods, their rock in whom they trusted? And so forth. Then that's when he whets his glittering sword, verse 41, takes hold on judgment, renders vengeance to mine enemies, and will reward them that hate me. This is the thing that a lot of people may not realize, would not want to admit, that the enemies of Israel are the enemies of God. Because in their ways, they are saying, well, we're defeating God. When we defeat enemy, Israel, we're defeating God because they're his people. But the reason he has allowed this is their apostasy, and their trust in self and turning away from God. In fact, we'll get into it later, but even the word abomination of desolation mentioned in the ninth chapter. If you take the word abomination, you're going to find out in every instance it's talking about the works of their hands, their idols. And so Israel is trusting in the works of their hands. And as a result of this, God is going to have to judge them. But when he sees their power is gone, there's none shut up or left, he goes out and defeats the enemy. Gord goes forth and fights as when he fought on the day of battle. In the 14th of Zechariah is a very graphic picture, and it's terrible. It talks about their eyes consuming away in the holes, and their tongues consuming away in their mouth, and their flesh consuming away from their bodies. And it sounds like atomic power, but it's used of God in the punishment of those who came against Jerusalem. It's going to be a terrible time, and I feel sorry for Israel because of what is ahead of her, and I pray with Moses. He said, oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, and that they would consider their latter end, how one should chase a thousand, two put 10,000 to flight, because of their rock. But he said, oh, that they were wise. If they could just see and would turn to the Lord in a natural and wonderful way so that they wouldn't have to go through this, but they're just not going to do it. He's going to have to punish them one more time based on his rules back there in the book of Deuteronomy. But Israel will turn to God as a nation, even as some are turning now as individuals. And they will be saved, but they will go through a great deal. Houses rifled, women ravished, captivity. In fact, I've said, in the seventh chapter of the book of Daniel, it calls them beasts. What other description do you have of what's going on in Iraq today than beasts? They're not human. They can blow up men, women, and children, innocents, as well as those that deserve it, and it's a terrible thing. And so God's going to have to take care of them. People say, oh, I wish we could take care of them. I said, well, I think God has the final solution. In fact, much as I hate to hear of American deaths in Iraq, and I stop and think, what would be the consequences if we fail in Iraq? An example of this is when Israel gave up before she had defeated Hezbollah in Lebanon. What are they? They're laughing at Israel. We defeated Israel. We defeated Israel's God. Well, if we pull out of Iraq before there's some kind of solution, the U.S. and Israel will be classed and seen as weak and easy targets for bombers and economic reprisal and anything else you can think of. And so I just don't really think there's any solution to it otherwise, other than actually staying in there and fighting until there's some thought of normalcy, which is difficult to see at this particular time. But God is going to be the one that's going to have to take care of the whole thing. And I know that seems like maybe a weak answer to some people, but he is the final solution. When the stone is cut out of the mountain without hands, the kingdom of God strikes the image at the feet, destroying it all at the same time, and establishes the kingdom on this earth. That's going to be the final solution. But in the meantime, expect great trouble. And for ourselves, for Israel, anybody that loves Israel, it's going to be a really rough and tough time. But we believe that God will make it come out right in the end. We thank you for your time, and to be continued. And we appreciate input and questions any of you might have on this topic.